If you're looking to ensure your place, Sheila's Wheels are super ace. We've got an offer that astounds. Get a gift card for £40 for brilliant home insurance deals. Go direct to Sheila's Wheels.
£40 e-gift card applies for new home essentials policies purchased direct between the 5th of March and the 28th of April 2026. See terms and conditions at sheilaswheels.com.
Most people don't lose their relationships overnight. They lose them one distracted moment at a time. And the scary part is that they don't even realize what's happening. They're texting, they're scrolling, they're multitasking, you know, they're thinking they're connected, but they're not. So the question is, why are we more connected than ever, but feel more disconnected than ever? Today, I'm joined with Michael Clark, and Michael is behind the Our Moment movement, helping people reconnect in a world that's constantly pulling them apart. And today, we're not just talking about the book. We are talking about a problem that almost everyone is dealing with, whether they realize it or not. Why do so many people feel disconnected right now, even in their closest relationships?
It's funny. I actually touched on this in my book as well. It's really ironic that we are more connected probably than we've ever been, mm-hmm. with more devices at our disposal. But to your point, the disconnection between human relationship and other pieces is massively in decline. Part of it, I think, is because, well, there's a few reasons. If you think of the current generation, they're just given devices too early in life in some cases. So they don't really learn the fundamentals, abilities of what you and I had growing up, which was emotional intelligence, building relationships. Like when I was younger, I didn't know I was going out until someone rang the house phone.
Yeah.
Or someone randomly turned up. Now we speak on WhatsApp and we decide if we're going to go or not. So we are giving devices too early. Second piece of the jigsaw is there's no guide rails around those devices in terms of, we're seeing this now with social media being banned below a certain age range in quite a lot of countries around the world. And I think that the cherry on top is, because of technology, certain fundamental abilities that we have are declined, or in many cases, they don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, many of us don't remember a phone number anymore,
right.
which is partly due to the smartphone generation. And you could argue probably way before that, when we had the first mobile phone. So it all leads you to think of, okay, is this a governance problem? Is this an education problem? Which I really do think it is. I think from an educational point of view, we are still teaching people to pass a test and memorize rather than giving them the abilities to operate in the real world. And building relationships is one of those abilities.
I agree. Now, what are people doing every day that's actually making this worse?
There's a few things. So they always say, you know, picking your phone up the first time you get up in the morning is probably not the first thing you should be doing.
No.
Would it be better to, detox your mind and do something else, get sunlight first thing,
mm-hmm.
Rather than text someone, could you phone them?
Right.
And because if you've got an elderly parent, like I phone my parents every day because, not to be morbid, but you want to hold on to a voice. I'd rather hold on to a voice than a text message.
Right.
So I think there's lots of things that we can do with our devices. But I also think there's lots of things we can do to strengthen our mental muscles as well, which makes a big difference. And that's really about being very conscious of how you spend your time and what you look at and how you limit your time and how you, continuous learning is a real big part of this as well. Okay. But I think one thing that we can all do is also limit the time we spend on devices. And one thing we don't do very well, and I used to live in London, people just don't look up. Like London is just beautiful, full of history, old buildings. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've all got these creak necks because we're constantly looking at our phones. So I think there's a lot to be said of not stopping looking at things, but there's a time and a place and an allocation that you give. But as I keep coming back to as well, there's still a lot of groundwork that we need to do for the world that we're moving in, starting with education, because we don't have the abilities today to navigate all of these devices. They've almost been thrown at us at a certain point, but we haven't been taught the abilities then to work with them, if that makes sense.
Oh, it does make sense. I think a lot of people believe that if we're taken, and we're like, let's say if we're talking or texting or spending time together, we're connected. But that's not always true, right?
It's not. And we forget that most of our conversation is nonverbal. So most human conversation takes place. I'll give you an example. You could be in the office with your colleague and you immediately, if something is wrong, based on how their body language is.
Yeah.
They may look flustered. They may look sad. You're never going to get that from a WhatsApp message or a text.
Right.
Unless their language is quite short and their texts are shorter than usual, you might go, what's wrong?
Right.
But they could pass that off and say, oh, I'm fine, and then you move on to the conversation.
Yeah.
Whereas in person, you pick up so many nonverbal cues that you would never see behind a device.
That's so true. Now, what's the difference between communication and real connection?
So I think real connection is understanding and emotion, because that's really the power of relationship, because I think that's the difference between the two. Because real connection and real relationship is, this is someone I can rely. I'll give you an example. You've got 1,000 people connected to you on Facebook. If something really bad happened in your life, how many of those people would show up?
Right.
For me, that's connection. That's relationship. I've got thousands of followers on LinkedIn. Yeah, when I had an issue in December, it was one person I just met over the past year who decided to help me. So for me, that's the power of real connection. Because everything else then is just vanity numbers or people you'll never meet or, you know, certain connections that you have that you just have them for the sake of it. I think, you know, for me, a real relationship and a connection is there when you need them the most, and they also ask nothing of you in return.
Exactly. So do you think technology is helping us connect, or is it solely pulling us apart?
My worry is technology is now driving the direction of society. It's not enabling society.
Right.
There are two fundamental differences. Like when it's driving the direction of society, it's now driving the direction of where spending goes, where laws are applied. Whereas if technology is enabling society, it's actually augmenting us.
Yeah.
It's actually adding more value to what we bring. But at the same time, all the years of our life are also evolving to keep pace with the technology, because at the end of the day, it should just be a tool.
Right.
It shouldn't necessarily be the driving force. Which is the reason for the book is to say, look, this is the moment where we have a catalyst moment to really rethink the direction that we want to take technology.
Right.
That's where I see that the real difference is. And I think this year has been quite interesting because I think the world is slowly starting to wake up, particularly with all other nations outside of the US, Germany, other markets, starting to realize that giving children at a young age social media is not good for building human relationships and connection. Sad. And there has to be a point where you put an age limit on it. It's sad because you would argue those guide rails should have been put in place in the very beginning. But as it is, you know, at least something is being done, albeit probably quite drastic.
Right. Now, you talk about moments. Now, let's simplify that. Like, what does it actually mean to be present in the moment?
Yeah, that's such a good question. For me, being present is one, listening. Two, being aware of your surroundings.
Yeah.
And three, if you're with another person, you are listening to everything that they're saying. The other piece of being present is also appreciative of where you are and who you are. For me, that's being present. It's like living in that moment, recognizing that you're never going to have this moment again.
Right.
You know, we can record and tape everything on our mobile phones, but that moment and that conversation is never coming back.
Exactly.
So for me is the presence of understanding my environment, looking around, breathing, understanding my breath.
Yes.
But at the same time, listening to the people around me and then being able to engage in a meaningful conversation. Because that to me, that's what being present is.
You're 100% right. Yes. You know, you can't bring those moments back, you know. And they're so meaningful. And we sometimes take them for granted. We turn to technology and we turn to, you know, spending more time focusing on taking the picture or the movie than actually enjoying the moment itself. And I think that's what people have to really think about and maybe, you know, think about maybe revamping their habits, really focusing on that moment that you mentioned. And why are the small moments more powerful than the big gestures in your mind?
Wow. It's a bit like in a relationship. I remember Simon Sinek saying this. The reason your partner loves you is they just suddenly wake up one day and go, I love you. It's those incremental moments that you give and they compound over time.
Yeah.
So a single moment can just simply be kindness. Like it doesn't cost anything to be kind to someone. That's memorable. People don't want I don't think in relationships anyway, as an example, people don't want grand gestures. They just want you to be there in those moments that matter. And it's those little things,
yes,
like, you know, going to get a coffee for your partner without being asked, being, you know, in a taxi, asking the driver how he is today. Like,
right,
he may have had 100, you know, like, for example, I live in Dubai. I've had some great conversation with taxi drivers who haven't seen a single person all day because no one's here, no tourist. It's very difficult. But that moment for that taxi driver has probably given them an uplift and something. So moments also demand empathy, right? Because at the same time, you have to put yourself in the shoes of others and understand where they're coming from. So for me, those small micro moments at the end of the day, they add up over time versus the big grand gestures. Whilst they're great,
mm-hmm,
they're inconsistent, whereas a micro moment is a constant thing throughout the day and throughout time. Whereas,
right,
a grand gesture has a moment, could be a birthday, of course, but mm-hmm, it doesn't last a whole year, does it?
Right. Very true. Like, how do you become more present without completely changing your life?
One thing that I always do is I wake up every day constantly curious. So that means I walk out the house every morning and assume that I know absolutely nothing. So. And I'm constantly curious. Like, for example, I catch the taxi to the gym every morning. So mm-hmm, I get a different driver every morning.
Right.
So I'm constantly looking around his environment, curious.
Yeah.
The smell in the car, oh, that smells nice. Well, what's that? Or if you're in the elevator going down the stairs and you see tourists who've got some bags and things, that's present because now I can engage a conversation with them and say, oh, are you going there today? So
yeah,
for me, that's a big part of my day is that I'm constantly curious. Why is someone doing that? Why is the sky like this today? Why is the driver looking like he is? Why is this person? But it also allows you then to engage in conversation with other people you don't know because I'm constantly curious and learning on a daily basis. It's not a question of, well, I need to talk to this person. No. What can I learn from this person
mm-hmm,
that I don't necessarily know? For me, these are little moments that I carry throughout the day. Uh-huh. And I feel like I'm giving to the other person, but at the same time, I'm learning something along the way.
Yeah, I love that. And for, you know, let's think about this for a second. Let's make this real. Like for couples who feel disconnected, what's the first step?
Wow. So men and women are so different, right? So men are natural problem solvers.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to solve problems regardless.
Right.
Whereas women gravitate to other women, I think, because they will listen and there's no expectation of solving that problem. It's just, hey, I just want you to listen to me and vent. So the first step really, isn't it, is having a good communication and listening.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a man, I've learned this through the years that you learn more just by saying nothing. But I think communication cannot be underestimated because over time, a relationship will make or break based on communication. Because that, and I think those are the two things. And also in that communication, understanding what matters most between the two of you. Because again, you know, if we're talking about moments matter in relationships more than people think. I'm speaking from experience because for people to grow together and stay together, those moments matter more than anything because they will determine. You can be doing everything in your life right and then one moment will make it go wrong.
Right.
And it's that communication and understanding. And I think the other part of the puzzle is core values between you.
Yes.
Because if you're with someone and the core values don't align, then that becomes very difficult in life. And these are things you'll only ever know if you are present.
Yes, 100%. Now for parents, how do they reconnect with their kids?
Yeah, this is... So it's really interesting. So in the book, I wrote the whole school's curriculum for AI and redesigned it for the modern world. And I've had so many parents speak to me to go, well, how do I teach my children?
Right.
Because I don't think we realize a lot of children today meet most of their friends online before they even meet them in person.
Yeah, it's true.
It's crazy. But at the same time, they know their way around technology. But then they have such a larger disconnect between the parents' understanding. I honestly believe if you have the chance to do so, and I talk about this in the curriculum, I agree in some respects of what some of the nations are doing with social media. The answer shouldn't be to give a child a piece of technology as soon as they can walk.
Yeah.
I think the best way to reconnect with your children is to connect with them as people and not use devices as pacifiers and use them in the school environment if they're done, but at home,
mm-hmm,
you know, connect with them in an outdoor setting, connect with them on a shared interest. You know, it's not about, I'm going back in time when I was young, there was no, I had the first home computer. So mm-hmm, I've lived through this transformation and I wouldn't swap my childhood for anything. because I was outside playing sports and everything else. No parent understands their child because they're not cool. They can connect because there was a connection before technology. So my parents could connect with me because they were doing the same things that I was when they were younger, albeit in a different setting, and probably I had more opportunities than they did. But fundamentally, we were both playing outside.
Right.
Whereas now it's very different. It's probably harder for a parent to connect because they weren't playing Roblox when they were 10 years old. They were probably playing football if they were a boy or they're out with their girlfriend.
Right.
Part of it, as we said at the start, it's not bringing the device into the early years of that child's development.
Wow. You know, when I think about it, let's be honest, like people aren't going to give up their phones. So how do we set like realistic boundaries when it comes to technology?
So I know parents who time box. So there are, what's quite nice, there are apps you can buy now for children that you can put on their devices and they limit how long they can use them for. So the point is, I'm not going to stop you, but it can't be the only thing you do on a weekend.
Yeah.
Or it can't be the only thing you do every single night. Awkward. So what we're going to do is we're going to limit to an hour a day. Mm-hmm. And there are apps that do this. But then it's down to the bigger question is, how do you fill their time?
Okay.
So do you take them to sporting activities? Do you, like in the summer, do you send them to a summer camp?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? You can't just take something away and not fill that time with something. I think you have to balance it. Again, it all depends how old they are. If they've been fully exposed to it, I know from experience, it can be very painful then to suddenly go from cold turkey from abundance.
Yes.
But, you know, if you can do it as early as possible, you're winning. It's no surprise where the people who created this technology don't give their own children the technology.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
If there's a message you want to understand, if you see people like the Mark Zuckerbergs of this world, I believe, and many others who either have children or they have relatives, they don't give them the technology at a young age. Neither should we.
Right. That's very true. So, we shouldn't, you know, it's like you said, they should enjoy their childhood. They should be out there communicating with others. You know, you see the communication skills of today's generation is so different than the communication skills that we have. You know, I think we were able to connect better with other humans, where today everything is done by a text, you know, and that human connection is missing already, you know, and you know, it's kind of scary if you ask me.
But it's been, this is not new. This has been a slow decline through the decades.
Yes.
Like what we're seeing now is just the advancement of technology and the fact that it's so easily accessible today.
Yeah.
Whereas 20 years ago, it wasn't.
Right.
But there's, you know, the abilities, I keep coming back to, the abilities that we need to use it don't exist anymore.
Right.
Or they're rapidly in decline. So one example would be critical thinking. Most children don't have that because they're not taught it.
Right.
Which becomes a problem in later life because they won't know what's real and what's not in terms of what they're seeing on a screen.
Right.
Which has implications from cybersecurity, fraud, but also believability. So that's just one example. Do children know how to deal with change? Right. Most people don't deal with change until they're an adult. When a relationship fails, they lose their job.
Yeah.
Or if something happens in a business and there's a reorg, you'll notice that every person will deal with that change differently.
Yes.
That's what makes us human. But we're not taught how to deal with change in school. We're not taught how to debate. We're not taught how to reason. We're not taught our purpose as people. And we don't untap the gifts that each one of us were born with.
Right.
So the argument could be that do any of us reach our human potential in our lifetime? Probably not. And then if you throw AI into the mix, which we are today, nobody has the AI literacy skills or the data literacy skills to use it effectively, but at the same time, protect themselves in terms of things that are being done in a fraudulent way.
Right. So, you know, what actually changes when someone's in someone's life, when they actually start living in the moment, when they actually start doing what you mention in your book, when they make that transition and that transformation, what actually happens to them in their life?
So it's a combination. So if we do what was outlined in the book with education, for example, if we start there, and we can go through different phases of life. If you start with education, I spoke to neuroscientists about this because I was interested, would we unlock new abilities in people? And the answer was yes. You basically would start to tap into a layer of human potential we've never seen. Can you imagine from the age of 2 until the time you leave school, you are taught how to think critically every day? You're taught how to reason, you're taught empathy, you're taught judgment, alongside all the domain skills. You'd be able to adapt in your life regardless of what technology hits you.
Right.
We wouldn't be, basically, if we stop teaching people to get a job and we teach them the abilities to adapt in the real world, regardless of what happens in their life, we would create an incredibly adaptable nation of people. Regardless of the headwinds, they'd be able to adapt. So that's the first milestone. People in day-to-day life, we can teach those abilities.
Mm-hmm.
But then if we talk about then, you know, what it means to live in the moment, what you would probably find is we would start speaking on the phone more. Mm-hmm. We would meet up with our friends more than we do. We probably get a bigger relationship with our family than we probably do have.
Right.
You know, we'd make the extra mile. We'd probably speak to people that we ignore on a daily basis. We would learn more than we do. It's endless. It's literally endless around the power of human connection. Because look, human relationship, we drew on caves. Because a cave painting is someone's identity. It's a reference of family and relationship. And for some reason, at a certain point with technology, we forgot what that meant. We now do it for likes on an Instagram reel, rather than necessarily a representation of who we are.
Exactly.
And that's what comes back when you live in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because instead of taking pictures of it, you live it. You live the experience. Because at the end of the day, when we do pass on, not to get a bit morbid, we can't take anything with us apart from the experiences and memories we left behind for others.
Right.
The materialism and everything else doesn't really matter because that just fills a void.
Yes.
The reality is, what's the impact you want to make and leave behind? And that impact is made in moments.
Very true. Now, not just in relationships, but how would people feel day to day if they actually started to live in the moment?
For me, I think it takes the pressure off in a strange way, mm-hmm. because we're so busy worrying about the future and worrying about what we did yesterday. We forget that all we really have is now. So I think people would feel more fulfilled. And of course, life is difficult for so many people in different ways, but mm-hmm. I think focusing on the moment, and that's the key word, is focus. I think you would feel much more fulfilled.
Right.
I personally do, because I read this, I think it was on the Diary of the CEO, where a monk said that we only live one day.
Yeah.
So if you keep that in the back of your mind, that the future isn't created yet and the past was yesterday.
Yeah.
All we really have is one day.
Right.
So when you think like that, your productivity will go through the roof because you're living like life is just one day at a time.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel more fulfilled. Your connections are more fulfilled. For me, my stress is much lower.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to maximize as much as I can in that one day.
Right.
Which, and all of a sudden, yes, everybody has worries about the future, but the future's not here until tomorrow.
Exactly.
I have no guarantees I'll be here tomorrow. So really, he was completely right. All we have is the one day.
Right.
And knowing that and treating it like that, for me, is no greater feeling.
That's so true. Now, if someone was listening and feels disconnected right now, what's the first thing you should, you know, what they should they actually do today?
If you were feeling disconnected, I do this all the time. If I feel like I'm losing things, you just reconnect with the people in your life. It could even be such, like, I tell you one great thing one of my friends did the other day. Okay, they didn't ring me. They left me a WhatsApp. But they just said, look, I wanted to call you today to say how grateful I am for you in my life. And I'm just calling all my friends because I don't do it enough. For me, that's connecting again.
Yes.
We don't do it enough. We don't tell people in our lives how important they are and what they mean to us.
Yeah.
But again, you know, if you're feeling disconnected, the first thing is, well, who can you reach out to talk to and connect?
Right.
Go on for coffee with someone you haven't seen for a long time. Don't take your phone. Put your phone in your pocket. The amount of people, I've seen people who go to dinner parties and the rule is that the phones go in a basket next to the table, because there's nothing more off-putting than seeing, like, if you and I were having a podcast in person today and both our phones were on the table and one of them went off.
Yeah.
We'd immediately break that connection that we have.
Exactly.
So the first thing you can do is reach out to someone. As it pertains to the device, just don't look at it when you get up. Like, get outside and go for a walk. If you're lucky enough to have sunlight, get some sunlight.
Exactly.
So, like, you know, if this is the day, get out there and live it.
Yeah.
Don't be disconnected to the device. Reconnect with people. Don't turn the device on when you wake up. Get some daylight. You know, this is well-trodden path. You can look this up on the internet, you know, anywhere. There are things you can do when you first wake up in the morning. And I think there's a lot to be said for being grateful as well.
In terms of having gratitude
for what you have and where you are. Because we often, I don't know if you're like this, but you can sometimes be too busy looking forward or never satisfied where you are, where most people would give so much money to be you right now. So that's why I'm always grateful as well. So that, again, is a point of being present. But no, This connection is about removing all of those, whatever we call distractions.
Right.
And reconnecting with people that you may have not connected to for a long time.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Now, you wrote a beautiful book. Can you tell people what it's called? And also explain to them, you know, what it's about and why you actually wrote the book. What was behind the motivation?
So the book is called Our Moment. And the subtitle of that book, I think, is important, which was The Story of Destiny and Human Potential. And that's really what the book became about. It became a book about purpose, identity, and potential. And the reason the book was called Our Moment was because I think we're in a very unique period in human history. We haven't had a piece of technology that can fundamentally alter the very fabric of life. But it's also challenging a lot of some of the outdated economic systems that we have in the world today. The way we work and the way we live mm-hmm. is being challenged. Yeah. And I would argue it's about time because a lot of it is not fit for the modern world. And that's not a criticism. It's just the fact of the reality of life. Yeah. Like we've talked about the education system. Well, that has not changed
right.
for decades. You know, we're putting children into the world and all they do to get there is memorize some dates
yeah.
to test. Mm-hmm. And they're suddenly thrown into the world and meant to survive.
Yeah.
And if they've only ever been trained to do one job and they lose that job,
yeah.
what does that mean for them in the next 10 to 15 years? But I had to tell a story that everybody would understand because you don't want to write a boring consulting book because the best will in the world, that one, won't reach an audience and two, it won't be memorable. So when I was growing up as a kid, I used to read a lot of classical novels that made you imagine you were there. And then one of my favorite books of all time was The Alchemist because of the way it was written and the sentiment. Yeah. So basically, that's what I did. I wrote the book in the style of The Alchemist. I created my own version of a Santiago. And I told the reader a story of technology that never heard. Some of the mistakes we made, some of the mishaps that have taken us to where we are, and some of the opportunities that we missed. It's done through the eyes of a boy, because I assumed anybody under the age of 30 doesn't know the world any different. As we've said, they were just given a device. They don't know where it comes from.
Yeah.
They're born into an economy that they don't even know where it came from. They're taught in a way that they don't even understand why. But also more importantly, they don't know the alternative routes that we didn't choose.
Right.
And he finds a book, which is a bit of a magical book, and that takes him on that story of history through the help of others. But then he realizes that there is an alternative way. Mm-hmm. Because the reason the book is called Our Moment is because we have almost two paths that we can take now. We can take AI and other technologies and continue the journey that we've been on mm-hmm. and accept that we're going to have mass layoffs. We'll have to have universal basic income, as we're told, and it'll be a nightmare. Or we can go the other way, where the technology enables us. We change our school system so children can reach their human potential, where everybody has access to technology under inclusion. We are all able to adapt. Mm-hmm. And even AI itself changes to be more of a collaborative technology rather than something that's here to replace us.
Exactly.
So that whole story through the eyes of a boy in the journey, hopefully, and the feedback's been amazing so far, is that it gives people a chance for what the world could be.
Mm-hmm.
If all of us reached our potential
yes.
and we were all given the things that we've lost
mm-hmm.
or we were able to have the chance to regain them and skills and abilities that would allow us to reach levels that so many of us can never imagine. And at the same time, we build that human connection again
yeah.
where technology is just a tool. But mm-hmm. the ultimate innovation of the centuries will be humanity, mm-hmm. not necessarily technology. Which is really the basis of the book. And to answer your second question, where did the idea come from and why? I've been in this field a very long time and I've noticed in myself the connection declining and it made me question what's the world going to be like for the next generation. And that sent me on a journey of trying to figure out what took us here. I'm probably one of the very few people, I don't know how old you are, but I remember the world before technology and the internet. And I've lived through this transformation. So I remember the world as it was before it.
Right.
And it wasn't perfect. And I'm not suggesting we go back there. Uh-huh. But I'm also thinking about the duty of care that we have to the generations that follow us, to leave them something better behind than we found it. So they have a chance to be educated, to succeed in life, mm-hmm. and have all the abilities that maybe we did not. That's kind of... and. In the end, my job was just to be the storyteller and solve a lot of complex problems.
Right.
To hopefully give them something to want and yes. believe in. Because you'll be surprised, so many children give up their data today because they know if they don't, particularly in areas like social media, they won't even be able to connect with their friends, which is really sad. Mm-hmm. So that was really the motivation behind the book. And the other was really to see if we can reach the people who make the change, to see if they can actually look at this as an alternate path mm-hmm. as they start to think about AI policy, as they think about data and how we should be using it. There are alternative ways where we all win rather than take on big tech. Big tech even wins if we think a little bit outside the box and think more about the second and third order consequences.
I agree. And where can people find your book?
So it's actually on most, luckily my publisher is Mark Victor Hansen, so who you know very well. So that's enabled it to be in most online bookstores like Barnes & Noble. You'll find it on Amazon.com. It's in most of those outlets now, which is amazing.
I love it. Love it. And tell us a little about some of the services that you provide.
Yeah, so I'm a bit unique in the sense that I've been able to do for my career. It's almost like an actor choosing the right script. I've chosen to do that, whether I did it consciously or unconsciously. So I've done every job in a business across from creating products, sales, marketing, to change management, investment, so everything. Mm-hmm. So because of that skill set, I help a number of different people. Yeah. So I work with governments from an advisory standpoint, helping them think about the policies and regulations as it relates to things like AI and emerging technology and data. I work with investors, particularly with all the noise around these technologies, around where they should be investing. I work with product teams who are building products in this environment, but are struggling to sell them or even sell them to companies and what they need to do. And obviously, I work with boards then as well in terms of C-suite. Because look, we can't get away. It's incredibly hard for leaders today.
Yeah.
With so much noise they have to deal with. And also how they're struggling to transform their organization to be able to use some of these technologies. So I play a big role there in terms of providing coaching and advisory, mm-hmm. helping them transform the business or even just giving them direction. Where they're heading.
And where can people find you?
So it won't surprise you, the last letters of my website. So it's michaelclark.ai, the last two letters, AI. And I'm usually causing trouble on LinkedIn as well. There is a newsletter, which is on my website, michaelclark.ai, which goes out at least 3 times a week, which covers a lot of these topics. So it gives insights and key themes, I guess, that touch on some of those people that I've mentioned, giving them some direction. And also generally for the everyday person, who just wants to know where heading and what are some of the opportunities and options and people who really care about these things, particularly with their children and particularly as adults around their careers and their jobs.
I love that. Most people think they need more time, better communication, or less stress. But really, the truth is that they need to be present in the moment that they already have, because connection isn't something that you find. It's something that you choose. And, you've made that very clear in your conversation today with me. And you really, helped me actually realize the importance of, living in the moment and being present in the moment. It's such a beautiful opportunity that we all take for granted, because we don't get those moments back, and we really should be present in the moment. We should live in the moment and not be so engulfed in our electronics and our technologies, but actually have communication with others and really, really appreciate each other's company and what we each have to say. I think today you did an outstanding job getting that message across to people. And is there anything else you'd like to share before we go?
I think the other piece you mentioned, the word time. I think a lot of us don't really understand time, and I think living in the moment is one thing, but also using your time wisely is an important thing that we don't do enough of. Because let's just say you put that device down and you get 2 to 3 hours back of your life, mm-hmm. Well, what are you going to do with it?
Yes.
That's where understanding time is very important, how you use it. So I would say living the moment's important, but also then using that time wisely. Yes. Don't waste it in other areas and other things, because we're told with AI we're going to get all this time back. I would argue that we probably don't know how to use that time yet.
Exactly. Well put. And I think that's something people have to really think about and consider also, because a lot of times we don't use our time wisely and it could be used for so much more and it could do so much more good, bring so much more pleasure and create memories that will last a lifetime and really embed in people's hearts forever. So you really, thank you so much for being on the show. You're a wonderful individual, and I can't wait to read your book, and I'm looking forward to reading it. And I thank you so much for your wisdom and knowledge today and everything that you shared. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
You have a great day.
You too.